Hello, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news as we discuss, are the Glazers preparing to sell Manchester United and force Ineos out? They have the movement to do it. They can do it. Will they do it? Also, huge offer coming in from Saudi. We'll get into the details of what that is. Also, a little bit about Ryerson. We were talking about him on Friday. German reports linking us with him again. Got a couple of things from ex-players that I want to sort of get into and expose as well. I think they're wrong on both, but we'll talk about that as well. And some further updates around Man United's priorities going into this summer transfer window coming up this morning. I am alive, Bald Eagle. Barely. I'm late this morning. My nose just won't stop running. I went out with the dog this morning and I don't know. You can probably see I've got my eyes are quite red. My nose is, I'm running. I don't know what it is. I feel fine. I just can't stop blowing my nose. Might be a cold. Anyway, thanks everyone for getting in. Meza, why don't you come and present the show? In fact, let's get rid of Meza because you're absolutely no point. Big know-it-all in the chat. Get out. Okay, let's get into the show this morning. And we're going to start off with, are Manchester United likely to be up for sale anytime in the near future? Obviously, there was the fallout from what Sir Jim Ratcliffe said last week. And a very interesting article in the BBC, which I sort of touched on a little bit last night, but focused more on The Athletic. So basically, you might remember this. We have spoken about it before. Under the terms of the agreement that saw Sir Jim Ratcliffe invest £1.25 billion in the club in 2024 to purchase 28%, if the Glazers receive an offer from a third party that they want to accept, they can force him to sell his portion. The Glazers are horrified by his recent comments, and in the coming days, Sir Jim Ratcliffe is going to discover if the Football Association's legal team has decided the Manchester United co-owner brought the game into disrepute. This is all bad. Well, I don't think it's bad. I think it could be good if they get out of the club. But obviously, it's very bad for the reputation of Manchester United. Now, look, I think the speculation about sales, you've always got to be very, very careful. I think we'd all love to see one. But speaking to somebody last night about this, they basically said, look at the Athletic article, look at the BBC article in the last 24 hours. This isn't going away. And this is being written about by outlets that realistically don't necessarily want to talk about Man United and a sale very often unless something's going to happen. So what I was told is that, look, this is a very serious situation for Manchester United. And whilst they may be able to navigate their way out of it, it depends whether people want them to. Now, do people want to give Sir Jim Ratcliffe and the Glazers the benefit of the doubt and let them just calm it all down and get a load of brands in and stay for another decade or two? Or do people want to put their foot on the neck and say, no, we're not letting this go? So it's going to be very interesting to see what the FA do, because if the FA charge Sir Jim Ratcliffe, that is more than last week. That keeps the story going. It keeps Man United in negative press. It causes the Glazers more problems. And they do have this vehicle, which I think started this year, where 2 years after Sir Jim Ratcliffe's input, they can sell his shares without his knowledge. Basically, if somebody comes in with an offer that they like, they can accept it. And if Sir Jim Ratcliffe doesn't match it, he has to sell them. So I think we could be at the start of something. I really do. I think that a lot of people are talking about sponsors stepping away. So much is like unpredictable about what's going to happen. I mean, sometimes with these sort of things, they disappear and everything carries on as normal. However, we know what the world's like at the moment. On some very key political issues, on some very key beliefs, people won't let it go. There's conflicts in the world that have been going on for years and people are very staunch on which side they're in, whether that's this country or other countries, rightly or wrongly. I think Sir Jim Ratcliffe has said something that is not going to just go away. And if it's not going to go away, I think it will have a huge impact on brandification of Manchester United and potentially the stadium, which massively devalues what the club are trying to do and potentially forces the Glazers to have to sell. So look, I think it's real. I do think it's real. I think it's very early days, but I do think it's real. And I wouldn't say I was encouraged, but I was educated from the conversation I had that, look at what people are writing. This has caused huge problems. If Man United was struggling for brands 2 weeks ago, and they were, imagine what they're doing now. They've got current brands who are not happy. Like, they're not happy. They've held conversations with Manchester United. Current brands that we're working with are like, what's all this about? What impact is this going to have on this, that, and the other? at, you've got new brands that you're trying to attract, you're trying to do a regeneration project, and you've got the issues that you've got. So look, you still need what I said last night, though. You still need somebody to step forward and have the money to buy Manchester United. That's the big thing. Is anybody out there willing to do write that check at the moment? Now, also, you've got the Glazers and Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who are absolutely desperate to get this regeneration project up and running so they can make a lot of money. So you're fighting against those things, but it's probably the most problematic position they've been in since they did the deal together. And how they navigate their way out of it is going to be very interesting. If they wanted $6 billion, Ineos would buy it anyway, says Robert McCormack. I don't think they would. I think you need to understand the situation. Robert, sometimes you talk sense and sometimes you talk total shite, like when you talk about how good Mason Mount is. Ineos don't have $6 billion to buy Manchester United. They don't. They don't have it, and they wouldn't do it because Sir Jim Ratcliffe is in huge trouble at Ineos. He's got massive debts. He's got shareholders. Absolutely not. And if they had that money, they'd have bought them in the first place. They didn't have it. If the FA punished Sir Jim, I hope they do. Why aren't they doing more to punish Manchester City for the FFP charges? Isn't cheating bringing into disrepute, says Nikki. Nikki, an orange and an apple are not the same thing. I mean, that's the simplest way I can say it. Sir Jim Ratcliffe being punished for saying something verbally in an interview that everybody heard is very different to saying, I mean, they're not just going to get up tomorrow and say, Sir Jim, you've been charged and so have you, Man City, because it's exactly the same thing. I mean, it's just not the same thing, is it? It's just not the same thing. I hope you're well, Mark and United stand. Happy Pancake Day, and I hope you're feeling better soon. I've always sensed the power struggle between the Glazers and Sir Jim. All need to go, says Daniel. Well, I hope there is. I hope there is. I hope it is the start of something. And Tony, welcome to the Members Club. Thank you very much. And Michael Murray says, have you seen Knight of the Seven Kingdoms? It's very good. Yes, I have seen it. Yeah. Okay, a few people talking about the Saudi offer. There is a huge Saudi offer. It's not to buy Manchester United. So basically, this is coming in from the Times. And effectively, it is saying that Manchester United are preparing, the Saudi Pro League are preparing an £18 million offer to Manchester United to pay their 2026 pre-season in Saudi Arabia during July and August. So basically, remember we've had all this talk about friendlies that United are so bloody incompetent. I don't know why we haven't done these, by the way. I mean, why haven't we done this? You've got Le Mans out in Belgium. You've got Bruno out in Portugal. They're having a bloody holiday. It's not even an international break. They've had so much time off this season. And they're all having a bloody holiday again. Because what else are they going to do? Carrick can't keep them training for 2 weeks. So we've got our players on 300 grand a week on holiday. No one else is on holiday. Our players are on holiday. It's bloody embarrassing. And I'm not taking a pop at the players. I'm taking a pop at the ownership. You pay these players ridiculous wages and they're on holiday when everyone else is playing football. And yet, you could have been doing these Saudi games on the multiple weekends and midweek games we've got free. We could have been doing this then. You're now going to do it in the Saudi Pro League. And I just think people are getting excited about it, right? 18 million to go and play our pre-season tour in Saudi, right? We normally go to the States. We could go to, you know, the other side of the world. We normally go to places where, to be honest with you, it's a little bit more interesting than going to Saudi just for a paycheck. Because Saudi will be... I don't find a Saudi Pro League pre-season massively inspiring. I just think it's just quite dull, if I'm being honest. However, the money's not even that much. 18 million and people are getting excited, right? This is from an article in the summer. Manchester United are set to earn around 15 million from their 2025 US pre-season tour, based on recent reports regarding their summer schedule. They'll earn 7.5 million from participating in the Premier League Summer Series. Also, there'll be brand opportunities and other commercial power plays they can make to knock it up to about 15 million. So if we're making about 15 million last summer and we're going to the Saudi Pro Tour and we're going to make 18 million, all right, okay, it's still a considerable amount of money, but it's not like, I don't know why we haven't done this in season. That's my point. I thought we were going to go and play a friendly against Ronaldo's team for 5 million. I mean, why have we not done that? You know what would have been a good idea this weekend? To go to the Saudi League and play a game. Or this Monday. Or this Tuesday. Or this Wednesday. That would have been a really clever idea. Because we actually need the game as well. So if we'd gone out to the Saudi Pro League today and played a game that's on the telly, loads of people would have watched it. And we would have made 5 million quid out of it. Instead, we're going to go to the Saudi Pro League for the US tour. For the tour, not the US tour, although we do go to it. We're going to go to the Saudi Pro League when we normally go on tour and make a load of money anyway. And, you know, look, there might well be reasons. However, I think it's... I think they've dropped the ball again, haven't they? They really have. And look, as I say, I haven't got a problem with players being on holiday when there's nothing else to do. But there's nothing to do because we've failed. The reason we've had this period of time off is because we messed up in the FA Cup. It's not a reward. It's a crime. And we should, as a football club, be utilising this time to do things that could help us out financially. It's obvious. Somebody said it's not worth risking the players mid-season. Jonathan, have a bath. What are you talking about? It's not worth risking the players playing a game of football. Have you ever thought that not playing a game of football for 2 weeks might be more of a risk? They're playing 40 games, Jonathan. Wake up and have a wash. What are you talking about? We can't risk the players. Risk them doing what? Stubbing their toenail in a 5-star hotel in Saudi? Come on. Have a bloody word with yourself. You're not Jonathan, are you? You're a Man United player who wants a fucking holiday. How much revenue will Man United lose since they're only playing Premier League games this season? Would that have an impact on the ownership, says Sully? Yeah, I mean, look, we are going to lose a lot of money. Robert, I'm not listening to you and your Ineos bullshit. He said, so Robert says they bid 5 and that was before this deal was agreed. Yeah, mate, this was 2.5 years ago and they didn't bid 5. They never bid 5 because they never bid 100%. They were at 75, then they were at 50, then they were at 25%. They haven't got the money. Do your homework. Stop living up the arse of Ineos. They're fucking shite. And nobody wants to listen to your Ineos propaganda. There is a guy on YouTube who lives up the arse of Ineos. I'm not going to give you the details, but I'm sure someone in the chat will. This is the perfect time for big protests. If Sir Jim gets extreme backlash from the media and fans, it will affect Sir Jim and Ineos as a company. Without Sir Jim, the Glazers surely can't fund United, causing them to sell completely, says Jack. Well, look, it could be the start of something. It could be the start of something. We'll have to wait and see. Thank you very much for that. Okay, let's move on. I want to move on to some of the transfer stuff and some other stuff that's going on. There's quite a few bits to get into this morning. So, interestingly, this is just a couple of bits coming in from Rich Fay, who's formerly of the Manchester Evening News. He says, Manchester United's primary object this summer is to refresh their midfield, and there is also interest in adding a versatile forward. Should they secure Champions League qualification, the club is expected to pursue defensive reinforcements at fullback to manage the heavier match load. Also, United will prioritise a midfield refresh at the end of the season, while there is also interest in adding a forward. I don't know why I just read the same bloody thing twice. I thought it was United Stand. It's another bloody aggregator that's got a bloody badge that looks like United Stand. Sorry, I'm just repeating that there. In a sense, that's repetitive anyway, isn't it? Man United's primary objective this summer is to refresh the midfield. Well, we sort of know that. If they get Champions League qualification, they could look at defensive reinforcements at fullback to manage the heavier match load. I think that, look, that there is so much uncertainty around transfers, and there is so much that needs to be done to that team, and there is so much wrong with the way the club is being run. I mean, I read something this morning that Sir Jim Radcliffe and the Glazers are really happy with Omar Berada and Jason Wilcox and have got no plans to replace them. And I just feel like we're stuck in this spin cycle of incompetence. I mean, we had this for a very long time with Ed Woodward and then John Murta and Richard Arnold. And now we've got bloody Omar Berada and Jason Wilcox. They're factually shite at their job. Like, there's no evidence that they're good at their job. They're really bad at their job. It's not even predictive. They're terrible at their jobs. We have wasted so much money in the last 18 months. We're talking over $500 million on players, sackings, compensation. It's incredible the amount of money that we have wasted on their utter incompetence. And people say, well, people make mistakes. Look, I can give you so many pathways to saving quarter of a billion pounds. You sack Ten Hag, you bring the right guy in, you've just saved quarter of a billion pounds because you don't give Ten Hag 300 million. You don't recruit Amorim and have to sack him. There's so many avenues they've gone down where they've just cost the club so much money. And yet, again, the ownership are going, well, we're very happy with what they're doing. You're very happy with them doing a shit job. What is it they do that makes you happy? Back massage? You know, hide your bloody incompetence with their own incompetence? It almost feels like they keep these shit people in post because they're shitter than they are and they sort of provide a buffer to them. But, you know, I look at the summer transfer window and I just don't know what we're going to do. I expect Champions League football, so I expect midfielders, wingers, fullbacks, and maybe some bench players, but we'll have to just wait and see. However, one thing that did catch my attention this morning, and it was in Bild in Germany, is that Manchester United are closely monitoring Dortmund's right-back, Julian Ryerson. Now, we spoke about him on Friday. He actually had, we spoke about him on the Saturday morning show. He had a hat-trick of assists the other night against Mainz. Norwegian international, 28 years of age. I mean, I think that's a problem straight away. But the more we get linked to players like this, the better. I think that our fullbacks are abysmal. We were talking last night on the 8 o'clock show about the low block and the inability to break a low block. Well, you can break a low block if you've got people running down the flanks who can put decent crosses in to somebody like Sesko. So Ryerson in Europe is probably one of the most creative right backs in the game. And I don't give a toss whether he's 28 or 18. If he's doing that on a regular in Europe, in one of the best leagues in Europe, then I think these are the sort of players that Man United should be looking at. Now, whether we're going to break our parameter of we don't buy players over 26, that's going to be a big problem. Because financially, I think it's a deal that could be done quite straightforward. He's only got 2 years left on his contract. Dortmund would probably would be quite happy to cash in if it was a decent price. Let's monitor it. But again, United probably will look at right back and go, we don't need a right back because we've got Mazraoui and Dalot, which to me is another symptom of the problems we have at Manchester United, because you can't look at Dalot and Mazraoui and say we're all right at right back. You can look at Dalot and Mazraoui and say we've got two right backs, but you can't look at them and go we're all right at right back. Last time I checked, creatively, neither of them offer very much. Defensively, I like Mazraoui, and there's no doubt Dalot puts a lot of effort in, but going forward, you'd sometimes question whether they can cross their legs. It's abysmal. I think the best clip of Dalot crossing last season was when he was on a night out and he looked both ways to cross the road. And that's not a joke. I've seen that clip. So we're not all right with Dalot and Mazraoui at right back, because teams know we're bad at breaking down a low block. Well, the way to deal with that is to get wide players in that can put crosses in. And your fullbacks are the two players that tend to be natural. And what I mean by natural is left back is a left footer, right back is a right footer. They're very important in wing play. A lot of people don't understand why you have a left footed player on the right and a right footed player on the left, inverted wingers. And the reason for that is because in the modern game, we've seen the evolution of the winger with Marcus Rashford, Mo Salah, even going back to Ronaldo, where your winger scores a lot of goals. And the reason they score a lot of goals if they're inverted is as they cut inside, it's a far easier shot to cut in from the left and shoot with your right, or cut in from the right and shoot with your left, because you're on your strong foot looking at the goal. Whereas if you're on the left-hand side and you cut inside, you're on your weaker foot. So this is why a lot of teams use inverted wingers, because they see them as forwards and goals now. However, you don't see inverted fullbacks, because your fullbacks are meant to provide the natural width. So where your left-footed right winger inverts and cuts inside, like Ahmad, your right back overlaps and you provide an L. So you have a threat cutting in and you have a threat on the overlap. And your overlapping fullback is the guy that's got to be the best crosser, because they put the natural cross in. Well, we don't have this. So when we're doing a low block, we don't have the natural width, because neither of our fullbacks are very good at putting a cross in. So these two areas could provide Man United with so many points next season. If we had Ryerson and, I don't know, Lewis Hall or somebody who can put a cross in from the left, we would solve our low block problems massively. You can still invert your wingers, but you've got fullbacks that overlap and put crosses into the box that Sesko can get on the end of. So I think this is massive for Manchester United, but they probably won't buy a right back because they'll go, we've got Dalot, we've got Mazraoui. Hi, Mark. United should sack Wilcox in the summer and bring in Luis Campos from PSG. He would then bring in Enrique, says Sud. Sounds like a great idea. Chris says, I'm a bit behind, but imagine the backlash if they go to Saudi this week, win 4-0, then lose to Everton on Monday, or if Maynou picks up an injury there, says Chris. But I would argue that backlash, because I've always said going to Saudi in season is a good idea. I think 70% of us agreed with it. So if we went and played in Saudi and Maynou picked up an injury, of course people would moan about it. But ultimately, we've played 40 games this season. If we were still in the FA Cup, he could have picked up the same injury. You can't wrap professional footballers in cotton wool because they're not performing. Like, we should be playing a game now. We shouldn't be going from last week to West Ham to next Monday against Everton. That's piss poor. Any coach is going to tell you that gap's too big. There should be some game going on. There should be some element of football going on. And you get a bit of money for it as well. Dak says, will the Glazers sell if Jimmy's gone by the summer? Mate, the vehicle for removing Ineos from Manchester United is quite simple for the Glazers. And I don't know whether anybody knows about this, but there is written into the contract a vehicle that forces Sir Jim Ratcliffe to sell his shares if the Glazers want him to. That's there. That's not normal in a contract, and it wasn't there for the first 2 years, but it's active now. The Glazers can say to Sir Jim Ratcliffe, we're selling your shares, you have to sell them. That can be done. Or he has to buy the whole club, which I don't think he will. So it could be the beginning of the end. Two things need to happen for that. The pressure needs to be on the club massively. They need to struggle to get brands. And I think they will. I think that if a big brand was announced today as working with Manchester United, there would be certain groups and organisations that would be protesting against them because of they're putting the money into the pockets of someone like Sir Jim Ratcliffe. And I think that's the world we live in. I think we all know that. You see it in America. There will be protests about that sort of thing. But secondly, also, with regards to the ownership, there's got to be somebody who will step forward and buy the football club, which we don't have at the moment. Ashish says this club needs a complete overhaul from the owners to a lot of the players. Any regular employee of a small company would have been fired for this level of incompetence. This club needs a reset. I mean, look, maybe I'm wrong on this. I don't think I am, but I find it incredible that we, being on Man United's board, you're bulletproof in relation to nothing can touch you. You're titanium. You know, you're invincible. Because you get told they're doing a good job, but then the evidence is they're doing a bad job. But they never want to change them. Patrick Lynch says, for highly acclaimed business people to not see the opportunity to have mid-season friendlies is a huge miss. Sure, it's mercenary, but isn't that something we've become? For is it too expensive to send the team out there? Well, Patrick, we spoke about this when the story broke back in September, and 70% of us voted to do it. It is mercenary. Of course it is. But we're losing so much money that if you want to buy players, you know every bit of money that the club brings in helps that happen. It also helps to pay the debt. It also helps in other ways. But I would rather have 10 million come into the club than 10 million don't come into the club. You know? So I completely agree. Odd says, I've been a regular viewer since the Mourinho's days. This is my first super chat. All the cuts that Ineos have done is worthless because that caused us to lose revenue because now few games we play this season, says Odd. Yeah, I mean, look, strategically, it's not going the way they planned. When they did the strategic review, when they took over, they were working on a minimum of Europa League qualification for the next 5 years. Well, this year, they're not in Europe at all, so they're already losing money. How long can Maynou remain on his current contract, says Sanal? Well, I wouldn't worry about that because we're going to sort that Maynou contract out very, very quickly. Saudi League is in season now, might be difficult, says Mr. Tomba. Yeah, but I don't think they play midweek games, do they? I'm sure there was opportunities. Also, AC Milan, maybe they were an opportunity as well. How much revenue will Man United do? I've done that one from Sulla, I think. Lovely stuff. Okay. Let me just have a quick chat here. A look at the chat. Club would rather concentrate on the Prem and getting top four. It's worth more than a mid-season friendly, says Phil. Well, it's clearly not, is it, Phil? I mean, simple maths. If we get into the Champions League, we will earn £100 million in revenue. If we play a mid-season friendly in Saudi, we will earn £5 million. That's £105 million. Going to play a mid-season friendly in Saudi when you've got 2 weeks off is not going to impact you getting Champions League football. We're going to play a football game. We're not going to play against the Australian rugby team that are going to break our legs. So you'd earn more money. I thought this clause was only for the first 12 months, Mark, says JMR. I think you're getting mixed up on your clauses. So when Man United did the deal, Glazers and Sir Jim Radcliffe, there was a two-year period where the Glazers couldn't sell the shares of Sir Jim Radcliffe without his say-so. We're now outside of that. So it's 2 years where they couldn't do it. Now they can. Rahm is the perfect left-back choice. One of the best crosses in Europe. Most chances created after Bruno. Clause in summer under 35 million. Him and Sesko work together really well. Look, I'm not against Rahm. I think he's a very interesting player. I'm just checking his age. I mean, look, if you're saying to me Rahm and Ryerson, I'd be very, very happy. Another player that's going to be 28 in April, though. And again, like, you know, it's almost like if you go for people who are 28, like Ryerson and Rahm, they're two of the most creative fullbacks in the world. And United will go, yeah, but they're over 26. And I would go, why does that matter? Well, we have this parameter that we don't like buying players over 26. Yeah, why? Well, we just do. Who told you to do that? Jason. Jason, why? I read it in a book. What book? I didn't read it in a book. Why are you doing it then? It just sounds hip. Does it? Why? I just did, all right? Yeah, okay. So there's actually no reason why we're not buying players over 26. Well, if you buy a player over 26, they've got no resale value. Why are you buying players with resale value? Because if we want to sell them, we want resale value. How's that worked out at United then? Well, it means if you buy a 22-year-old and they don't work, you get a resale value. Yeah, no, this doesn't work at United, right? When Man United buy players, they're either a success and we keep them, or they flop and we don't get any money anyway. We don't buy to sell. Are you telling us we're a buy to sell club now? Well, I didn't say that. Well, you sort of did. You said you don't buy players over 26 because there's no resale value, but we're not a buy to sell club. If we have a good player, we want them to stay. And if they don't do well, they're a flop and we don't get a good value for them anyway. So what are you saying? And also, the reason Ryerson and Rahm are the two best attacking fullbacks in Europe at the moment is because they're right at the top of their game. Because that's what tends to happen between 26 and 30. You get players in their prime who are ready to play. So what you're basically saying is you don't want to buy people in their prime. You want to buy younger players to sell. That's a really weird strategy for a club that's called Manchester United, mate, because we're meant to be buying best in class and keeping these players. We're not meant to be buying to sell. It's a flawed logic. It's a flawed logic. Embarrassed that Sir Jim is associated with our club. Billionaires like him are the issues, but he blames immigrants for economic problems. Shame on him, says Nolan. And even Mickey Mouse would be a better director than Wilcox, says Dark. Well, what would you do, Mark? I'd tell you what I would do. I wouldn't set stupid parameters in place. As director of football, my parameters would be, I want a left back who is going to come into this team and give me at least 4 years of being one of the best left backs in the league. That's my parameter. And I don't care whether they're 20 or they're 28. That's my parameters. I want somebody to come in for the next 4 years and be one of the best left backs in the league. That's it. However, I'm not exclusively going to buy 26 to 28-year-olds because my team will age together very, very quickly. I do have to have younger players as well. So the Sescos and the Yoros and the Ahmads are very important. But the balance of Man United is about to become very inexperienced very quickly when Casemiro goes, Maguire goes, and Bruno goes, and Luke Shaw goes, which they all need to go, apart from Bruno. We become quite a young squad anyway. So You do need a balance. But I could give you 10 players who are under 24 who are ridiculously experienced. It's just about getting them, isn't it? Ram Perfect says Red Devil Girl. Thank you very much. I think we read that one as well. And we did that from JMR as well. Right, okay, let's move on to a little bit more topical stuff. So we'll start with Gary Neville. So Gary Neville has basically come out saying that when Amrim said at the start of the season that it was him or Bruno in relation to Mainoo, he never agreed with that. It killed Mainoo. It killed him publicly. And then he never put him in the team at all, apart from against Grimsby. So basically, I think Gary Neville has described Ruben Amrim's treatment of Mainoo as his worst decision at Manchester United. I don't know how many people have watched the video I did yesterday morning, but there is levels to this game. Like, I don't think not picking Mainoo is Ruben Amrim's worst decision at Manchester United. I think that's a bit melodramatic, and I think it's a little bit easy to say when Mainoo's playing in the team doing well and Amrim's been sacked and Carrick's winning games. I don't think we're winning games because we've got Mainoo in the team. I think we're winning games because we're playing a system that the players like. I wanted Mainoo to get more game time, but I don't think it was Amrim's worst decision. I think his worst decision was taking the job in the first place. If we're being completely honest, you know, if you're a 3-4-3 coach and you come into a job where they're not going to give you the players for it, that's a bad decision. So I think that was his biggest decision, if we want to be real. I also think his worst decision was playing Bruno Fernandes in the midfield. I think his worst decision was putting Bruno Fernandes in the midfield. That head and shoulders. Not picking Mainoo annoyed me, but not picking Bruno in, putting Bruno in the midfield was clearly his biggest mistake. So I don't agree that not picking Mainoo was Amrim's biggest mistake, because I don't think Mainoo in our midfield would have necessarily solved the problems that we had under Amrim. The problems under Amrim was that we didn't win enough games because we didn't control the games better. We decided to defend. However, also, as I said in the video yesterday morning, when you're playing a midfield two, Mainoo's defensive output isn't that good. So I think Mainoo suits a midfield three. I don't think he suits a midfield two. Where I would agree is that if you're going to say publicly it's Bruno or Mainoo, you are killing Mainoo's position. You are killing Mainoo. I do agree with that. I don't think it was Amrim's worst decision. I think his worst decision was taking the job or putting Bruno in the midfield. But I do think you are killing a player mentally when you say it's Bruno or Mainoo, because it's always going to be Bruno. I knew that. You knew that. You're not getting in the team if it's Bruno or Mainoo. But the worst decision was putting Bruno in the midfield, because that's what blocked Mainoo off. I think that, you know, there's half truths there, but I don't think it was his worst decision. I think Mainoo suits a 4-3-3. I think if you watch that video I did yesterday morning, his defensive output's not very good, but his possession of the ball is. So in a midfield three, it works a lot better. But in a midfield two, I think, I don't know whether it necessarily did. Preemptive measures should be taken before summer transfer window, says Amit. Have you got any of those preemptive measures we can discuss? And Michael Murray says, does Bruno deserve to retire like Scholes at Man United if he continues to play as attacking midfielder, even though he's not as good as Scholesy? Strange question, Michael. I mean, deserve to retire. I mean, there's plenty of shite that has retired at Manchester United. You don't have to be Paul Scholes to retire at Manchester United. I think in relation to Bruno Fernandes, it's going to be down to him whether he wants to retire at Manchester United. I think United would more than happily have him do that. So it's going to be what he decides to do. Grimaldo and Ryerson would increase our goal difference by 15. KDB, I completely agree. I think that it's certainly something we as a community have been discussing for quite a while. The fullbacks are huge. We definitely need to prioritise midfield. We have to. We're so weak there. But the fullbacks, if we had two decent fullbacks going forward, it would revolutionise the way we play. It would solve the low block issues. We'd score more goals. We'd get more points. It is a very hidden gem area that we are neglecting. And as we showed with that graphic yesterday, I mean, hopefully I should be able to show it to you now. It doesn't really matter if I can't, but there it is. I mean, that is the best Manchester United transfer 11 since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. So we're talking 13 years. and our fullbacks are Luke Shaw and Wan-Bissaka. Neither of them get enough assists. So it just shows you it's an area that we've neglected massively for a very long time. And when I think about Manchester United, putting crosses into the box should come as standard. It's like those annoying presents you get for Christmas where battery's not included. And it's like, well, this should be, if this needs batteries, it should come with bloody batteries. And Man United should come with fullbacks that can put a cross into the box. 100%. Also, wanted to talk about this as well. I'm surprised I'd missed this, and maybe it's more of an 8 o'clock show. By the way, 8 o'clock show tonight, if I do what I'm going to do, just depends if any news breaks today. It's going to be a cracking show tonight, so make sure you tune in at 8 o'clock. There'll be a lot of debate in it. There's sort of two things come in from Rio. I nearly said Fairyland. Ferdinand. Fairyland is because his head's away in the fairies at times, but we'll call him Rio Ferdinand this morning. So Rio Ferdinand has argued that if Michael Carrick continues as Manchester United manager and keeps winning, he is the manager permanently that involves the least amount of risk, mainly because he understands what it means to be a Manchester United manager. He understands the environment But he then goes on to say that De Zerbi is someone he really, really likes as well, and that he can coach individuals, improve players, and can really put down a way of playing. You need someone who is strong with their identity, and he can coach the hell out of a team. He'd bring fire to the party. I'd bring fire. I wouldn't bring craziness, but I'd bring in someone who's bringing that fire and that passion. So, yeah, look, the managerial chat can get a little bit dull, but Michael Carrick brings the least amount of risk as a permanent manager, and De Zerbi is someone that Rio would like as well. I mean, is my opinion, not your opinion, maybe minority, maybe some agree. This is just another example why Man United should never, ever, ever listen to Rio Ferdinand. Like, the guy is just full of bad takes. Fantastic footballer, no doubt about it. I've seen he's on the cover as Men's Health, so he's obviously good in the gym. But that's the only gym he should be going anywhere near. He shouldn't be going anywhere near Sir Jim Ratcliffe giving him advice about football, because I'll never move past him at the train station saying, I'm hearing guitar. I'll never move past the Ollie contract. And Carrick provides the least amount of risk, and De Zerbi is someone he reckons we should go for as well. I mean, I saw it and I thought, I'm bringing it into the show. Like, De Zerbi as Man United manager, I don't get it. I just don't. Let's do De Zerbi first. I just don't get De Zerbi as Man United manager. For me, if it works, fine. But it's not obvious. The guy at Brighton was very vulnerable. I think he got figured out quite quickly and was very erratic. And this was the guy that said he'd rather play well than win. I mean, I just don't. And Marseille. I mean, Marseille ain't PSG and it ain't Bayern Munich. And he managed to implode there as well. At two clubs with very little pressure, he's managed to fall out with everybody and not be... I mean, people with De Zerbi, people act like it's like Vincent Kompany at Bayern Munich or, you know, Nagelsmann at Leipzig. He's not even that good. His track record isn't even that good. So I don't know what it is about De Zerbi. I find it strange with De Zerbi. I said this last time when they were going to get rid of Ten Hag and they were going to go with De Zerbi. I was like, I just don't get the De Zerbi height. I really wouldn't go anywhere near him. I think he's got a very high opinion of himself for very little evidence. So I totally disagree with that one. I think it would be an absolute carnage. I think what the media would do to him, he wouldn't be able to deal with it. I don't think he'd be able to deal with the pressure at Man United. I really don't. Just go back and read some of his interviews at Brighton and imagine him in front of the United's press after we've, you know, had a bad performance or, you know, he's got a problem with a player. I think De Zerbi is a terrible take. As for Michael Carrick being the least risky, I think Carrick's got a very good chance of getting the job, but I think he's actually the most risky, because how do you know, how can you say that Michael Carrick is the least risky option when one of the options could be Nagelsmann or Pochettino or, all right, Luis Enrique, whatever. Like, how can you say Carrick's the least risky when there are managers out there that are proven at the highest level? So on one, I don't know, I don't get why Michael Carrick's the least risky. In many ways, I'd say he's the most risky, because we all know what happens if he gets the permanent job and this time next year we're doing badly. Everyone's going to go, well, we already knew this. We already knew this. Look at Solskjaer. We already knew this. He got sacked by Middlesbrough. We already knew that he didn't have high experience and that maybe it was just interim vibes. So I don't get what the least risk is. There's risk with every manager, I'll put it out there, but surely taking an interim coach, no matter who you are, I mean, imagine if Spurs give it to this Tudor. If you go for an interim coach, there's always the big risk. It's written in the bloody dictionary, interim coach, very risky, because you never know whether it's a manager bounce in a nice environment that's going to snap the minute you go into a permanent environment. It doesn't say that in the dictionary, but of course it does. So I just wouldn't listen to Rio on anything that's to do with managers, really. But I did read the Carrick least amount of risk and thought, is an interim not the biggest amount of risk? I mean, if you go for Pochettino, if you go for Pochettino, multiple years of managing Spurs in the Premier League, knows the English game, has managed big clubs like PSG, that's more risky than a guy that has come in for a few months, got some results with a bunch of players that are very inconsistent, and the limit of his experience is the Championship with Middlesbrough. Hi, Mark. I'm convinced by the ownership that they will sign 3 centre midfielders. I swear we're going to hear about FFP soon. Oh, I'm not convinced, says Rohan. Oh, mate, 100%. We will definitely hear about FFP very, very soon. Amit says 1 centre-back, 3 midfielders, 1 right-back, left-back and a striker is what we need for the summer. Well, this is why I think that it's really important to have an idea in your head of what you think Man United need, so that when they don't provide it, you can see by how much they miss it. Because I think that we need to buy 2 fullbacks, 3 midfielders, a winger, a backup goalkeeper, a backup striker. That's 8. That's 8 players. And realistically, I would say we need between 7 and 10 minimum this summer. You know, will we get that? Will we get that? I don't know whether we'll get 4, if I'm being completely honest. So, if Bruno leaves, who's the next best captain, says local crackhead? I mean, it's going to be Harry. The sad thing is, it would be Harry Maguire at the moment, wouldn't it? I mean, is that why we're keeping him? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'd like it to be Martinez. They might give it to Luke Shaw. I mean, I don't. This is the thing. If Bruno goes, I don't think there's a lot there, is there? Mainu in midfield is better than Bruno in midfield, says Matt. I don't think in a midfield two. I don't think in a midfield two, Mainu works that well, if I'm being honest. But in a midfield three, definitely. Preemptive measures should be taken before the summer, says Amit. Thank you very much. I thought the only reason why the Glazers accepted Ineos' offer in the first place was to help get the necessary wheels turning for the regeneration project, says AJ. Exactly. And that's exactly why they brought them in. And that Yarni says, I hope the news is true about the Glazers and Ineos going, because as morbid as it is, I can see me going on with this ownership not being the best headspace for a while. And football is my escape. Well, I understand that, mate. I understand that. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you everybody for watching this morning. I'm going to go and try and clear my nose because it's giving me a right headache. Apologies for being a little bit late this morning. KDB says Enrique will see JJ and be very interested. I'm pretty sure Enrique's ruled himself out of the job. I just don't think we've had the official announcement of it, but whilst it's a possibility, that would always be my number one. However, I just don't think United have got a bloody chance of doing that, to be honest with you. I really don't. 8 o'clock show tonight's gonna be very good. Make sure you tune in for that. Make sure you smash a like on the video as well. There was something else I was going to say and I can't remember what it was, so I will probably have to just not say it. Thanks everyone who's tuned in this morning. Remember, we're live every morning at 10 o'clock and every night at 8 p.m. Any watch-alongs on the internet? That's football. That wasn't what I was going to talk about. I'm doing Wolves against Arsenal tomorrow night. I know it's Champions League tonight, but I think there's been a real... I don't know about you lot, but I think there's been a real drop-off in the quality of games to watch recently. I thought the FA Cup was a waste of time at the weekend. I think these Champions League qualifiers are a bit shit as well. At least last year you had Man City, Real Madrid. I think sometimes you have a clutch of, like, when the Premier League's on, it's great, isn't it? But I think we've got too much football at the moment. I thought the FA Cup at the weekend was boring. I think the Champions League games are boring this week. I think this is just a sign of too many games, really. Like, the problem with too many games is you dilute it. The problem with Man United is we don't have enough games. So I don't like what United are doing. Not enough games. But everyone else, I think they're playing too many games. But that's maybe for something else. Right, take care, everyone. Stay safe. I'll speak to you on the next one.